Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. Today is Sunday, August 14th, 2016. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. Anya Bula is an artist, blogger, author, and an activist in the atheist, skeptic, and disability communities. Anya is joining us today to talk about the issues she's written about in her newly published book, Young, Sick, and Invisible, A Skeptic's Journey with Chronic Illness. Anya Bula joins us remotely today. During this live show, I invite you to call in or write to us with your thoughts and comments. You can reach us at 952-946-6205, or you can email us, if you'd rather write, at radio@mnatheist.org. Anya, thank you so much for joining me on Atheist Talk.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And help me again. I know we discussed this before we got on the air, but your last name is Bula?
Bula, yes.
Bula. Wonderful. Thank you. I will try not to butcher it going forward.
No worries. I've heard almost every variation you could think of.
It's so close to my own last name, too. It's Bilyeu, and I'm like, where'd the vowels go?
Yeah, it surprises a lot of people that it's a Polish last name, actually.
Sure. Okay, so we're here today to talk about your book. Congratulations on getting it done. I know that just from our personal interactions and from reading the book itself that it was not a simple journey, at least not as simple as you were hoping it was going to be at the beginning.
No, I kind of confidently on my Indiegogo was all like, I'm going to write this book in a month. So 3 years later, I got it done.
And I think that a lot of authors share that same kind of process where it ends up, you know, 10 years down the line and finally that book is finished. But you actually have some special circumstances that contributed to that. I'm sure all authors do, but one of the topics, the major topic of this book is disability, and that's actually one of the things that affected the length that it took to write, right?
Yeah, there was actually a couple times where I did sort of sprints where I got huge chunks of the book done. And at the end of almost every single one of them, I ended up in the hospital. And what was really funny is one of my friends was like, so are you in the hospital because you're actually in the hospital or are you doing research right now? And I was like, can't it be both?
Right. Okay, so this book is called Young, Sick, and Invisible. And it's all about your experiences with starting to experience the symptoms of a illness at a very young age, younger than most medical professionals are used to seeing, right?
Yeah, and that actually came to play, too, as you probably remember from reading the book, that a lot of times the reaction of doctors was, there's no way your arthritis is this serious when you haven't even, you know, reached 19 years of age. Which is really entertaining considering there is actually a type of arthritis called juvenile arthritis. So you'd think they would know better, but apparently not. And I mean, people always have this idea of youth going hand in hand with health. So when that stops all of a sudden, it tends to confuse a lot of people.
So you started out with eventually getting a diagnosis of, and how do you say the particular illness, psoriatic?
Yep, it's related to psoriasis, which most people will know as a skin condition. Mm-hmm. It's similar sort of to eczema in a lot of ways. It's an autoimmune condition, actually, which a lot of people don't realize. Because most of the time, you know, you see psoriasis and you think, oh, it's, you know, just a dry skin patch or something like that. But no, it's actually an autoimmune disorder where your body's attacking your own skin.
And so that took long enough to get diagnosed because you went through this whole back and forth of, I think there's something wrong, and being told there's nothing wrong, or there's something wrong and we don't really know what it is, or there's something wrong and we can't diagnose it. And so you finally got that diagnosis of arthritis and started getting appropriate treatments for it, only to get a second whammy with Crohn's disease.
Yep. And it turns out actually that the whammy should have been a little bit more expected because psoriatic arthritis and Crohn's disease are actually part of the same gene, which a lot of people don't realize. And so when the gene is activated, there's a whole host of autoimmune disorders that you might end up getting. And if you get one, the chances of getting the others are also slightly increased. So.
And just so our audience knows, so our listeners understand, how young were you when you got when you first started getting sick?
Well, I got my official first diagnosis for psoriatic arthritis when I was 18 years old. I got sort of my major flare-up the year following my 18th birthday up until about 1920, which is when I sort of they realized how serious it was. Looking back, I realized I started actually presenting symptoms as young as 13, probably even earlier than that.
This book, I want to come back to that, but I want to also start talking about the book and what the book is. The book is part autobiography and part disability activism in the form of education and part skepticism, education, particularly around the topic of alternative health and alternative medicine, right? So the one thing that really stuck out to me was all of the talk about disability, because you start talking about disability very early in the book, but we learn through your journey that for a long time you didn't consider yourself chronically ill, and you kind of had to come to grips with understanding that this was an illness that was not going to go away. This wasn't just sick, this was chronic illness. And then a whole different journey to start identifying as disabled. Is that correct so far?
Yes. Yeah, it's there's a lot of social pressure basically to not think of yourself as disabled. We very much, as a society, think of identifying as being disabled as being a bad thing. That you know, it's sort of giving up. There's been a lot of times where you know I'll tell somebody that I'm disabled and be like, oh no, you can't give up. And I'm like, who said anything about giving up? All I did was say I was disabled. And so I had to struggle again. It's that social pressure for a really long time to sort of go beyond, no, I don't just have an illness. I don't just, you know, have these diagnoses. It's actually, I'm actually disabled. I actually have to accept that fact. And it was really liberating, actually, to finally look at it and say, no, no, I am disabled.
And so let's try to get a common, it's a huge topic, and there's no one definition that covers what disabled is, but can you give us like the 30 seconds down low of your understanding and thoughts on what does it mean when someone says they are disabled?
I think it means that there's a part of their health that consistently impacts their ability to function in abled society or in what we sort of colloquially termed normal society. So whether this is a physical impairment in terms of, you know, what we consider physical health or mental health, I think both of them apply. I think people who have mental health issues are just as much disabled as people who have physical health issues. It can be something that causes pain. It can be an injury, like a permanent injury. It can be an illness, but ultimately it's an aspect of your health that differs from the norm that impacts your ability to function within abled society.
And how does that differ from, in your experience, what greater society perceives as what disability is?
Well, I think most people perceive, first of all, disability as mostly being a physical thing. I think that we as a culture still very much have a hard time accepting that mental health and physical health are not actually two separate issues. What I find really hilarious is that mental health is basically the result of a problem within the brain.
Which is
and
physical.
A part of your body.
Right.
So it's really, like, I mean, it's really no different than, say, a condition like fibromyalgia that affects the nerves. You know, they're both physical conditions, but because we very much see sort of the world, like we see the brain as being this almost metaphysical thing as opposed to a physical thing, that we have a very hard time accepting that mental health and physical health are actually the same thing. And we really need to, because there's such a huge overlap between the two, that as long as we keep them separated, I think we're not actually having full care. And I think I talk about that at some point in the book as well. The other thing is that we tend to think, as a society, as disability, as something that's very consistent and non-changing. So, for example, the idea where people will see somebody in a wheelchair suddenly get up and reach for a shelf, and, you know, there's this horrified expression of, oh, my God, you're faking it. You know, how dare you be in a wheelchair? When in reality, actually, somebody could need a wheelchair without actually being permanently paralyzed or having an unchanging condition. There's days when my disability impacts me less than other days. You know, we call those good days. And so we very much, as a society, see it as a permanent, consistent thing. Mm-hmm. And so when there is variability, we have a very hard time processing it.
Sure.
And I think that's part of why I had such a hard time is I'm like, well, I can't be disabled because sometimes I have good days. Well, that's kind of ridiculous.
One of the things that was really eye-opening for me is you give some examples of the different kinds of help, quote unquote, that friends and family try to offer without your consent, and that it all comes off as very condescending, and that there's this underlying expectation of no one expecting anything from you when you're disabled. You spend quite a bit of time in the book talking about that. Can you expound on that a little bit?
It sort of goes in with the idea sort of having a difficulty coping with an able society. And the idea is that if you're having difficulty coping, that it's the fault, that it's your fault as opposed to society's fault. And so there's this sort of hand-in-hand idea of incompetence, which sort of goes into the idea of intelligence. And a lot of people with disabilities will find that a lot of able people will treat them as if it's more than just their physical condition or their mental health condition that impairs them, but that they actually are missing some form of reason or cognitive ability.
Anya, I hate to interrupt. We have to come back to this after the break. So we're going to go for a quick commercial break. Everybody who's listening, please stay with us. We'll return to Atheist Talk with our guest Anya Bula. I'm Brianne Bilyeu, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Most of us spend half of our waking hours at work. How can we create more positive experiences in our workplaces? Join us this Saturday at 9 a.m. when the Living Happiness Radio Hour welcomes Peter Bailey, president of Prouty Project Strategic Planning Firm. We'll explore how the principles of emotional intelligence can empower us to encourage engagement, enhance performance, increase meaning, and support relationships and team building in the workplace. The Living Happiness Radio Hour is part of Connections Radio right here on AM 950 this coming Saturday at 9 a.m.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly. Plus, our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers. With scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from, it's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
There are those that say that the recent severe storms are God's judgment. There are those that say humans are causing climate change. Humanists know that knowledge of our world comes from observation, experimentation, and rational analysis, not from reading horoscopes or old writings. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find meeting times and locations and more at humanistsofmn.org. Like us at Facebook, too, or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. I'm speaking with Anya Bula, author of the book Young, Sick, and Invisible, A Skeptic's Journey with Chronic Illness. We are taking questions and comments for Anya on the topic of today's show, so if you would like to join in the conversation, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email us at radio@mnatheist.org. Okay, Anya, before we went to break, we had just started talking about societal expectations of somebody who's disabled and the desire to help out people who are disabled, even if they don't really ask for or want that help.
Mm-hmm. So I was saying that people have this sort of assumption that people who are disabled are flawed in some way, or that they somehow are cognitively disabled in addition to being in addition to being physically disabled, and that means that they're unable to sort of make decisions for themselves, or may not even be able to make those decisions for themselves. And I mean, we see that in smaller forms when people, you know, for example, will grab somebody with a wheelchair and, you know, push them up a hill even though they didn't ask for that help. But we also see it in larger, scarier ways, actually, where people with disabilities sometimes get sterilized against their will, and euthanized against their will. So it's sort of a small issue. It may seem like sort of a smaller issue when it starts off, you know, with people holding doors for you even when you don't need the help. But it turns into a much bigger issue when you realize basically how consistently it happens throughout society.
And you don't often hear the term bodily autonomy applied to people who identify as disabled. But there really is, what we're talking about is the right to your own body and to pride, and pride in your abilities that you do have.
Yes, and actually that's a really great chance to sort of point out that when we look, for example, at sexual assault statistics, you know, we have already terrifying numbers in something like, you know, 1 in 3 women will experience sexual assault. When you look at disability, it's more like 80% of people who have a disability will experience sexual assault. And if you're female, or if you identify as female and are female presenting, and that disability includes a cognitive component, the numbers go up to nearly 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the other, another part of this is the, you mentioned it before, having to accept help gracefully even when it's not asked for. So it's like this idea of chivalry, how some people like to use the word chivalry to mean that they're doing something nice for you, so you better accept it. And you point out that some of this, you know, comes from just random strangers, but a lot of it comes from friends and well-meaning family. So you have a large part of the book in the back that talks about things to do and not to do when you're interacting with someone who identifies as disabled. And one of these things is to ask if you think that you might want to offer help, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same way as you would with anybody else. Sometimes people may look like they need help, but they don't want it. And, I mean, a person who has a disability has just as much right to refuse help as anybody else. And what's important is that sometimes when you have a disability, you have less an opportunity to refuse help simply because you need it more often than not. And so you find yourself, you know, in a situation where you have to accept help more often than you would perhaps to somebody without a disability. So the ability to be able to say no every once in a while can actually become even more important, because it's sort of that reminder that, no, you still have some form of control over your life. And when people sort of force that help unasked, you're basically just reinforcing the idea of admitting that you're disabled can also sometimes mean admitting that you no longer have any control over your own life. And we need to make that not be the same, not be a correlation.
And let's talk about empowering disabled persons by making society more accessible, right? Because that's a big thing. We'll have to offer less help if we can actually make society more accessible to all different types of people. Because right now, in your book, you very clearly make a case for the fact that society is not accessible to so many people. And if you ask an able-bodied person, they'll say, yeah, we're accessible. And I should point out, you're in Canada, and so some of the things I'm going to say may be only applicable to the U.S., like what I'm about to say, which is, you know, here in the U.S., we have the ADA. And I don't know, do you guys have ADA? Well, you wouldn't have ADA, but you've got something similar to ADA.
A lot of the laws are actually very, very similar. We might apply them differently. There might be specifics that are different, but in general terms, it's the same. You know, you can't discriminate against somebody. You're legally required to provide accessibility to a point. But there's, you know, the same as in the U.S. as in Canada, there's always, you know, exceptions to the rule. So, for example, Ottawa has a lot of buildings that still have stairs but no ramps or no elevators. And the reason they can get away with it is because they're grandfathered in. You know, they're historical right. buildings, so it's unreasonable to expect them to be torn down, to put down, you know, to put up a building with elevators or with ramps or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, that is understandable. You know, you're not going to be tearing down an entire city. But at the same time, what you have to look at is just how often we're willing to make these exceptions be the rule rather than the exception.
And one of the things that you address is that a lot of times things will be made quote-unquote accessible, but they're designed by people who don't understand who they're trying to make it accessible for. So it'll often be things that aren't very useful for you in particular.
Oh, yeah. For example, a lot of, you know, buildings will be like, oh, yeah, we're totally accessible because we have ramps so that you can get into the building. But then they don't realize that, for example, all the door frames are too small to allow most wheelchairs to pass through. So, you know, you have this accessible building unless you actually want to get into anybody's apartment or use a restroom.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned specifically ramps that are put out of the way. Because when someone's designing it, they think, I need to design an accessible entrance for someone in a wheelchair. But they don't give as much thought to someone who has a lot of pain walking with a cane. And to put that ramp so far out of the way basically means you have to make a decision whether to go up steep stairs and possibly endanger your health or your physical health, or to make that long, painful walk over to a ramp that's out of the way. Because when they sat down, they didn't plan adequately. They didn't plan effectively. They planned with a bias in their head, like what we were talking about earlier about what people think disability is versus what kinds of disabilities are actually out there.
Yeah, and I mean, what's also going to be an issue is that there's a lot of times where there's sort of competing accessibility needs, right? I mean, somebody who uses a wheelchair versus somebody who uses a cane is going to have different specific needs, and that's understandable. But the problem is that we tend to prioritize certain types of disabilities over others, often with a detriment to a greater number of people.
So how do we, so in 30 seconds, how do we fix that? How do we fix all the world's problems when it comes to accessibility and making society more accessible?
Honestly, the biggest issue, hiring more disabled people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easiest way.
Sure.
It's really just a matter of getting more input from different people and also listening to disabled people. A lot of times, there will be, you know, sort of that one voice that everybody sort of sees that person show up at a meeting and they immediately roll their eyes because, you know, they're going to have, you know, another request for how to fix things. But the reality is that person probably actually has a better idea of what needs doing than the people sitting on the committee. One particular friend, in Ottawa, Heather, actually, she's been fighting with, the transportation system for quite a few months, if not years, and pretty much the city is doing everything they can to put barriers in her way, while at the same time, you know, claiming that they want to make things better for people with disabilities. And it's just like, well, okay, but, you know, our biggest voice right here, you're ignoring her, and she's the one who's having all these great ideas for how to fix things.
Right. I have to break in again. We have to go to break. We'll be back in just a few moments. Please stay with us. We'll return to Atheist Talk with my guest, Anya Bula. I'm Brianne Bilyeu. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF.
Every Saturday at noon, join our retirement conversation with the Neil Larson Financial Hour here on AM 950 KTNF. Neil brings you the retirement news and advice you need to create safe money. Call today for your free personal appointment. 952-303-3232. Neil Larson can show you proven financial strategies to help you create a stable income in retirement. Call today. 952-303-3232. Don't miss the Neil Larson Financial Hour, Saturdays at noon on AM 950 KTNF.
Great music, great stories, great conversation, and emotions come their way out of your radio speakers on the Wall of Power Radio Hour. Hi, this is Brian Turner from my good friend, singer, songwriter, and pal, Paul Metza. You get it all right here with two broadcasts, Saturday evenings at 6 with a repeat broadcast Sunday at noon. It's the Wall of Power Radio Hour with Paul Metza right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers, here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheists Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions, too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Brian Hyhill here with your weather update. Mostly sunny skies today with highs reaching 80 by this afternoon. Staying clear tonight and expect lows cooling off around 62. A bit warmer on Monday, mostly sunny skies with highs near 83, then a chance for showers and thunderstorms moving into the area Monday night. And now through the 28th, you have a great opportunity to experience what early music was all about at the Twin Cities Early Music Festival. Celebrate music from the medieval, Renaissance, Baroque, and classical eras. Find all the details and get your tickets at tcearlymusic.org.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk. Thank you for tuning in this morning. We're on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. Before we return to our guest, Anya Bula, we have just a few announcements. First, thank you to member Brent Michael Davids for composing the music that we use here on Atheist Talk. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of listeners. Any donation, great or small, helps keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. If you're able to help with the donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. We couldn't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, American Atheists, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise on this program in the form of a commercial, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. We'll get you hooked up with the right people to make that happen. We have a calendar of events on our website at mnatheist.org and on meetup.com. So if you are looking for something to do, we have activities and we cross-link from other secular groups in the area. So there's always something going on weekdays, weekends, in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to Anya Bula. Anya, I want to talk about the last part of the book's title. What do they call that part? The subtitle, the Skeptic's Journey with Chronic Illness. I want to talk about the skeptic part of it. So one of the unfortunate things when you have a chronic illness is that everybody's got answers for you, don't they?
Mm-hmm. I actually am getting to the point where I almost feel like somebody should have to pay me a quarter every time they recommend acupuncture.
Oh, gosh. And then you can afford, like, some actual medications that work, right?
That would be wonderful, yeah.
So, alternative health and unsolicited advice. You mentioned in the book that a lot of that alternative health comes from food solutions and from dietary recommendations. Everybody says that this can help with that or the opposite, it can't help with that, and it's usually the same thing that they're talking about from different people. So what have your experiences been with that?
Well, what's entertaining is, I mean, to a certain extent, you expect that when you have a digestive issue like Crohn's disease. But what I find really entertaining is the food recommendations actually started with my leg issue. And you would think, right, arthritis and food, right, there's no way those two go together. But I actually started having people being like, oh, well, you know, you can't drink coffee because it causes inflammation, or you can't eat tomatoes because it causes inflammation. And I'd just be like sitting there going like, okay, people are actually trying to tell me that my diet is what's affecting the fact that I have arthritis. So that was interesting. But what's really fun is how diverse the different diet recommendations you get are. I had, you know, one person telling me, that I should go absolutely raw food vegan. And then I had another person telling me, no, that's the worst thing you can do. You have to go, you know, completely paleo and eat primarily meat with everything that you do. You know, one person's like, you should go completely gluten-free, and then the next person is like, oh, no, that's ridiculous. You should eat nothing but carbohydrates. And it's just like, okay, can you at least all have a conversation so you're all recommending the same thing? And
to be clear, this none of this is coming from dietitians or doctors or other medical professionals, right?
No, I mean, some of it actually is.
Okay.
Nutritionist is sort of a really broad term because it feels like anybody who's taken any kind of nutrition class can now call themselves a nutritionist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of times where, you know, I'll meet somebody on the street and the first thing they tell me is like, oh, well, you know, I'm a certified nutritionist and the question I always want to ask is certified by whom?
Right.
What was even more entertaining is when people will start off Crohn's disease. What's that? Oh, I know the perfect thing that will help with that. And it's like, okay, so you didn't know what it was 5 seconds ago, but somehow you can cure it.
Right.
Okay. That's an interesting magical power to have. I wish I had.
Lots of arguments to antiquity and naturalistic fallacies when you're talking to people about alternative health, or when they're talking to you, I should be more precise.
Yeah. There is a lot of that. You know, a lot of times people will be like, oh, well, you know, you have to, it's because, you know, we're putting all these unnatural things in our bodies. And it's just like, well, you know, let me tell you, some of those unnatural things are actually the things that are helping me. People get really, really surprised when I tell them that actually boosting my immune system could be one of the worst things that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
That actually I'm on immunosuppressants. So I'd really rather not pay, you know, several thousand dollars to suppress my immune system only to go home and have some echinacea and ruin it all.
But people have been doing it for thousands of years. You had a quote in there that I really liked. I wrote it down. You said, humans have spent thousands of years defying nature to improve our lives, yet we still seem to think that natural equals safe and effective. And I paraphrased there, I think, because I got lazy with my writing. But, this idea that natural equals safe and effective, it just brought to line that Tim Minchin line, what do you call alternative medicine that works? Medicine.
Yeah, and I mean, even there, like, I still, as much as that is true, I mean, there is always a corporate side of things. I mean, we see that right now, and I mean, I'm not one of those, you know, hardcore marijuana activists who thinks that, you know, marijuana cures everything, because it's very much not the case, and I don't like going in the opposite direction. But it is true that it can be very, very helpful for a lot of conditions, including actually my own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the fact that it's natural. It's the fact that it has chemicals that actually work for, you know, reducing pain, reducing nausea. And that's great for some people.
Right. Yeah, you also mentioned, you know, pharmaceuticals are nature perfected for maximum benefit and minimum risk. Because that's what a lot of alternative health stuff is, like, you get a bucket of slop, and in that slop might be the one compound that helps you. But pharmaceuticals can actually distill out, you know, distill the good stuff and exclude all of the unnecessary or unhelpful or even dangerous things, like willow bark.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and this was actually, this happened to me once actually where I was sitting somewhere and I overheard a conversation between two people. And one of them was talking about how they had a problem because their child had Ray's disease, I believe it's called. It's a reaction to aspirin that can be fatal. Mm-hmm. And the person said, oh, well, you shouldn't be giving them aspirin anyway. Just give them some willow bark tea. And it was about one of the few times where I actually, like, almost knocked over the table in my rush to basically interrupt this conversation and be like, absolutely do not do that. You will kill your child if you do, because the chemical in willow bark tea is the same one as an aspirin and would have the same effect on the disease. Right. But because this person thought that they knew better because, you know, well, it was all natural, therefore it couldn't possibly cause this disease, they could have killed that child quite easily if they'd actually gone through with it.
Were you involved in organized skeptical organizations at this time, or did you, how did you discover organized skepticism and atheism?
Well, to start with, actually, my partner introduced me to a lot of really great bloggers, including actually yourself, and what eventually became Freethought Blogs and is now The Orbit. A lot of the same bloggers who basically were the ones I was following have now switched to The Orbit. Through my involvement with them, I started learning about a lot of things. And then James Randi came to Ottawa and did a talk through CFI Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And I went to his talk with my partner. And while we were there, we started talking to some of the organizers. I believe at the time it was Shauna and Marlo. And they told me about CFI Ottawa, and I told them about my wanting to get involved with a lot of things. This was actually around the same time that that whole elevator gate thing was happening.
Uh-huh.
And I was really empowered to sort of get a lot of, you know, female voices and atheism going. And so mm-hmm. I came in and I said, you know, I'd really love to see about planning a conference to have, you know, a bunch of great women speakers, you know, do a talk about atheism. And so when they were planning Eschaton, they remembered me talking about that, so they gave me a call and asked me if I wanted to get involved, and I said absolutely. And and I started getting involved with CFI Ottawa, which was great, and I made a lot of really great friends through that. And at Eschaton, I got a chance to meet some really amazing people, including Hina, I got to meet PZ, actually, which was really cool, or PZ, as we call him.
Canadians.
It was that. And as I was reading through this stuff, I realized how many times, you know, I find myself popping in with, well, actually, this is a thing that happened to me once. And I realized that I had some perspectives that a lot of people didn't, because a lot of times the people talking, you know, sort of about naturalistic fallacy and about alternative medicine weren't actually people who had to deal with it on a daily basis the same way that I had to. And so I started sort of putting feelers out there and wondering, you know, whether this was something people wanted to hear. And then completely sideways to that, at the same time, this author, this writer somewhere in the U.S. had written this kind of insulting article in response to a law that was being floated, which would make it illegal for people to deny bathroom access to people with IBS and Crohn's disease.
Oh, jeez.
Because a lot of times, you know, you'll go somewhere and they'll be like, oh, bathrooms for customers only. But, you know, if you're somebody with Crohn's or IBS or another IBD, you might not be in a situation where, well, you might not be able to afford to buy something in order to become a customer. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you might not have the time. Like, you might only have seconds to use the washroom.
Right.
So he was basically making this funny article about how nobody needs to use the bathroom that badly. So I wrote a response article saying, yes. Yes, I do. And I actually wrote about some of the times that I've had public accidents, including actually in the middle of a midterm. And it ended up being one of the most popular articles I'd ever written. Within days, I'd had a few thousand views. It had gone viral. I'd seen it posted on different Crohn's websites. Of course, I had to sort of face the fact that one of the most popular things I ever wrote was about how I pooped myself.
Right, right.
The things you deal with as a crony writer.
Yeah, we only have a few seconds, less than a minute here, so I just wanted to make sure that we got out the name of the book again. So this is Young, Sick, and Invisible, A Skeptic's Journey with Chronic Illness. Where can people find the book?
It's available on Amazon. It's available on most bookstore websites should have it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple bookstores that even have it in person. If you're, the chances of somebody in Ottawa listening to it, but you never know. The Chapters on Pinecrest, I believe, has hard copies. Barnes & Noble, if they still exist.
Wonderful. Yeah, they do down here at least. Borders is gone, but Barnes & Noble is still here.
That's the one. I couldn't remember which one actually went out of business.
All right, so that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Anya.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Atheist Talk, and make sure to stick around through the commercial break for this week's segment of American Atheist Viewpoints, produced by American Atheists and bringing you thoughts and voices from atheist communities. The next segment is pre-recorded. Thanks again for listening to this week's interview with Anya Bula. We look forward to bringing you a new show next Sunday.
You don't have to stay home to enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch. Tom and Jane welcome you to Milda's Cafe, where they've been cooking up family favorites since 1965. Up early? Coffee's a given, but it goes great with their Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Their lunch menu is full of home-cooked soups, chilies, and signature hot dishes. They even serve authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open 6 a.m. to 3, Monday through Friday. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
Robert Burrill here, host of the show Laughing Matters, brought to you as always by Stand Up Records. Check them out online at standuprecords.com. Laughing Matters is now on Saturdays from 7 to 8 p.m. and the show will be pre-taped, which means that I can swear and say words like and as always, it'll feature some of the funniest comedians in the Twin Cities talking about the latest news and current events, and it's an hour of nonstop laughs you won't want to miss. And it's only on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh-baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words Click Here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheists, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist's Viewpoint for Sunday, August 14th, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and I'm joined by Dave Silverman, President of American Atheists. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, Nick. Great to be here.
Always good to talk to you, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. So a couple fun things that we need to talk about. Number one, this week we just announced a big win with a settlement in Bradley County, Tennessee. The details of this one, we had been suing a sheriff for using his official government social media pages on Facebook for the sheriff's department to promote Christianity, promoting his religious beliefs. When we sent him a letter telling him to knock it off, he went to the media and said that the people of this county elected me knowing my religious beliefs, and these angry atheists aren't going to silence me.
Amazing.
Right? And then when people started criticizing his actions, he started blocking them and deleting their comments and prohibiting them from being on the social media page.
Right.
Quite literally violating the First Amendment right to free speech. It's one of the few cases where this actually where that sort of thing actually happened.
It happens, but it's so literal here. I mean, they were speaking on a public forum, on a public page, and he was promoting his religion on the public page. And when they said, hey, you shouldn't do that, the comments were deleted, and the people, the citizens of that community were blocked from the community's Facebook page because they opposed the Facebook page from breaking the law.
Yeah, exactly. So this is this was a slam dunk. This is one where, you know, the settlement came because the county looked at this and said, wow, we're going to really lose this one, and we're going to lose big. We should probably settle when it's only going to cost us $41,000, which was the total monetary amount to the settlement. We should do this now before it turns into $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever. So, you know, more or less a total win for our side on this one. I think the only thing that, you know, we wish we had been able to get out of this is that what they're doing is they're now only having a informational Facebook page. They're not allowing citizens to comment at all on things that are going on with the sheriff's department. That's, you know, that kind of stinks.
That'll be demand driven though, don't you think? I think that once people realize that they can't comment, they'll complain about that on their own. And then, they'll have to answer, the sheriff's department will have to answer why we don't allow comments on our Facebook page. And they'll have to say, well, it's because we don't want to have both sides of any issues on the Facebook page. I think it's going to be something that, they're going to have to face up with on their own. What we didn't get that I really would have liked is an earnest apology. I really would have liked an apology. I really would have liked the sheriff to say, you know what? I messed up here. I clearly was breaking the law and I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. We didn't get that.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing about most settlements in anything that we do, unless it goes to court and it goes all the way, you almost never get that. It's always they refuse to admit that they were wrong because that's they're allowed to save face in order to save money. And that's, you know, that's unfortunately the nature of those types of settlements. So, oh, well. But I think the way it shook out with getting $15,000 in damages and $26,000 in legal fees plus a huge change in policy kind of demonstrates who was in the right here. So we can just leave it at that.
demonstrate is the right word here. I mean, the one thing that we did get from this above and beyond the win is the example. This was, as you say, it was a slam dunk case, and this is not the only time that this is happening. The idea of a public official using a public page to preach their religion isn't new. It's not unique. And we think we can – I think we'll be able to use this as a demonstration of what happens when county officials break the law or when public officials break the law so earnestly and so openly.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I think we really need to touch on is that a lot of students are going back to school this week. A lot of public schools are starting back up. It's kind of hard to believe that summer's already over. The big reason we bring it up is because down in Florida, we have followed up with an initial promise back in, I think it was May, to ensure that Florida schools were following the law with respect to the Pledge of Allegiance. So previously in Florida, the schools had to post in a conspicuous place in every classroom a notification that students do not have to stand or participate in the Pledge of Allegiance. This is long settled constitutional law. We're talking, you know, 1940s here, ensuring that students have a right to not say the pledge. Well, Florida, a school in Florida, forced a student to stand for the pledge and berated him when he didn't. We sent a letter saying, you know, that's extremely illegal and don't do that. And then discovered that the school was not following Florida law. Well, when the news broke of this, Florida legislators actually changed the law, making it so that they didn't have to post that disclosure in every single classroom, but instead could post it and put it in student handbooks. So what we've done is sent a letter saying, hey, thanks for making it much easier for us to check to make sure you're actually following the law. We'd like to see your student handbooks. So we just sent out 57, 56 letters to each district in the state of Florida asking and actually demanding copies of their student handbooks. So what do you think is important for people to keep in mind when they're either if you're a student yourself headed back to school or if you're a parent of a student headed back to school? What do people need to know?
Well, the first thing is that if you're a student, you don't need to stand for the pledge. You do not need to recite the pledge. You do not need to say part of the words. It is not at all considered to be interrupting or disruptive if you sit down quietly and not say the pledge. Parents really need to support their children in their decision here. The idea here is that people have freedom, even children have freedom, whether or not they want to pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, one nation under God. It's very contentious, and children have the right to sit down for it. And most importantly, if you're a teacher, it's important that you recognize that this is a part of our social construct in America. Children are allowed to dissent. America is a nation built on dissent. And if a child dissents from standing or saying the pledge, they're not being bad, and they're not being unpatriotic. They're exercising their constitutional right. And it's a good thing, and it should not only be not discouraged, it should be encouraged that people should make their own decision. Children should make their own decision, and it should be free of any sort of pressure from the school, from other children, or from the teachers, or from the schools. They should have the right to do it, and they do have the right to do it, and we hope that the parents and the kids and the teachers can work together to allow everybody to express themselves as they see fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one real quick thing I want to add. Back in one of these cases dealing with this, the Supreme Court said it can hardly be argued that either students or teachers shed their constitutional right to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. This has been the unmistakable holding of this court for almost 50 years, and this was back in 1969. So, you know, this is long settled. It's time to move on.
Time to move on.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Thank you so much for joining us at the American Atheist Viewpoint. For more information about our work or where to become a member, please visit www.atheists.org. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Nick.